So Dolores, we were talking about how what the United Farm Workers has done has really changed a lot of things in America, including politics, the way people participate, mm-hmm. especially in the Latino community.
Well, I think that the one thing that happened with the Delano grape strike, it was also the beginning of the Chicano movement, right? Because it inspired everyone to do similarly. So you had students that were striking on the campuses. It just gave that inspiration to everyone. So, and then our going to the cities. You know, when we would go to the cities to do the political work, like for Bobby Kennedy, you know, we would get the local community involved in what we were doing. And in fact, I remember making a speech once and saying to them, you've got to start doing this on your own. You know, we can't keep bringing farm workers down to Los Angeles to get out the vote. You've got to get yourselves organized. And I remember some people taking umbrage with that speech, but later on people actually started doing it, you know. And so, the whole idea of doing grassroots work, of course, and that's what Gloria Molina did. You know, when she got elected, she did the grassroots organizing, which was very different from then having the Latina that would be elected somebody that all of the regular politicians or the establishment would accept. You know, you had candidates that were coming up from the grassroots.
But when the grape strike started, there weren't any significant number of Latino politicians.
No, there were very, 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 very small numbers, very small numbers. So that really what gave the birth to the Chicano movement, you know, the grape strike. And not only in California, but, you know, also in Texas, because there were also strikes going on, as I said, in Texas, also in Colorado. There was a strike over there in Alamoso, in that area there. So, you know, there was just like this great, movimiento that was happening because of the inspiration of the farm workers. Again, nobody would have ever been able to predict that. You know, it just happened. You know, using the boycott as a tool, it's something that we never even thought about initially, but which came out of the first strike, out of people getting arrested, and being unable to picket, then injunctions that the court got handed down gave birth to the boycott.
Well, it's like a lot of political campaigns use human billboards now.
Right, everybody uses human billboards. There's a lot of our strategies that were developed. In fact, the Justice for Janitors, which is now a big organizing thing with AFL-CIO, the head of that is Steve Lerner, who was a boycotter on my staff in New York City. And so, yeah, it's been a big seeding, I think, in terms of a progressive movement and progressive organizing that came out of the lessons of Fred and Cesar and the strikers and all of us that worked in the union.
And do you think
can
now
you
that...
Stop for a second?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
I need to change the batteries.
Oh, okay.
Sorry.
Okay. Well, I think we're almost done. We could stop now and we could do one more question. What do you think?
Okay, and Wild Track, that was a train. And we even had a horn in the middle there, that's great. Okay. Okay, so we're gonna do some more babbling stream, babbling brook sounds. There's a bunch of this on sound roll number one, but we're shooting it now, and I'm gonna get a couple more things, because actually, the traffic sound is quieter today than it was the other day when I did it, because maybe it's because it's Saturday morning or something. Anyway, so this is gonna be water sounds. Okay, so this is going to be fairly fast moving. It's actually the water coming through the culvert. So it's the downstream side of the culvert. Okay, let's try this again. This is going to be the water coming through the culvert, or just downstream of the culvert. Now we're going to move down to sort of a really sort of quiet little eddy.
Richard, what are your earliest memories of growing up as a kid in Arizona?
Well, we lived in a farm. Actually, it was a homestead that my grandfather had homesteaded, and then it was handed on to my dad. And it was some very good fun memories of that place because, you know, we were there until I was about 8 years old before we moved. And we had a lot of fun, like during the summer, we just hike all over the place and swim in the canal all day long and fish. And so it was very nice. We had some very good memories of that those days.
I heard that you and Cesar were quite the pool players. Is that right?
Well, not so much myself, but Cesar was very good. At the age of 13, he was they wanted to take him to Phoenix to enter a junior's tournament, billiards tournament, but my mother wouldn't let him go. He was very good. He was a very good pool player.
Now, what happened when you had to leave Arizona and go to Oxnard? How did the family react? How did you react to that?
Well, it was exciting, I think, for us because, you know, we had never been out of the farm there in Arizona. We had never been out of there. And so going to a far distant place to us, it was like, once we got there, it wasn't so much fun because, you know, we missed the old place a lot at first. But then we started making friends and, you know, hanging around the kids and so forth. And it was kind of, we forgot it pretty soon.
What about for your parents? Was that traumatic? Yeah. Yes. You know when you were saying when you left Arizona, it was romantic for your notion for you kids, but it must have been hard for your parents. How did they react?
When we left Arizona, it must have been very hard for my parents because they were living.
Good stuff for a second, please. Take off the glasses.
I was so comfortable with it.
Still rolling? Yeah. It must have been tough on your parents leaving Arizona.
When we left Arizona, it must have been very hard for my parents because they were living a place where they had been there for many years. They had, they had started to raise their family there, and we were coming to a place of uncertainty, really, because we had never done. Like picking the crops and things that we did after we came, and so I think it must have been hard for him. It's always hard, I think, when they have to make a move to a strange place, and It was fun for us, though.
And when you were in Oxnard, when you arrived in Oxnard, what did the family do? How did they make a living?
When we arrived to Oxnard, my dad was he was working in the fields. He was picking the crops, you know, like picking peas or whatever there was to pick it. And they used to grow a lot of beans around there. He used to work in the threshers, and that sort of work. It's all field work, though.
Okay. Now, when did you and the other kids get your first taste of field work? When was that?
Well, it was soon after that. We arrived we came to Oxnard in 1938 when we left Arizona. And then the very next year, we moved up north up to San Jose and we started picking prunes. So it was right after that. And during the summer, we used to pick prunes and apricots or whatever there was to pick. And so we started a very, very, very early age.
Okay. Now, you said you started at an early age. Now, what effect on you and on César have when you were out there and you saw how farm workers being treated out in the fields?
Actually, at first we didn't see that much because we didn't. We used to work pretty much by ourselves. The family used to work for small growers, not even that little man that had 20, 30 acres of prunes, and we used to pick his prunes or his apricots every year. And so it wasn't like there was a lot of other people around. We didn't see that until later when we started joining the big league, I guess you might call it, where there was hundreds or thousands of people working. That's where we started seeing that there was a lot of discrimination a lot of bad treatment of the people that were, of the workers.
And what was the reaction, let's say, of your father and your parents to that?
My father never did put up with it. He would quit. He'd strike or quit or go home or something. He never took the abuse. You know, there were some. If he was working with somebody who was really abusing people, he'd just leave. You know, he'd say, let's go. Let's not work here. We'd pick up and leave. You know, go look for something else. He never did take it. So it was not. Now I'm very proud of him that he used to do that. You know.
What effect did that have on you guys?
I guess it did have an effect on us because then we learned from there that people should be treated better, I guess, and that we weren't going to let anybody, if we could help it, take advantage of us. And I think that's where César probably got some of his first ideas in what he did later.
Now, do you have any memories of César as a young man being any kind of an organizer of games or clubs or anything like that? Did he do that kind of thing?
Not really. I don't remember. You know, we're around. I didn't see that in César until when he was older. When he has already started working at. He had other jobs besides farm work. At some point we did. He worked at a box factory, and there was union there. And I think he kind of picked up on what's going on there, what the difference. He could see the difference between union and non-union workers and so forth. And I think there's lots of ideas, too, that could happen with farm workers also. I think myself, I also worked in a cabinet shop, and I could see that the difference between working out in the fields and working at a place where it was more organization, it was better organized, there was a lot of difference. So I think that's where we picked up the idea that we could also do the same thing for farm workers.
Okay. Now, tell me the story of when you and César first met Fred Roth. What happened? some interesting things happened.
Oh, yeah, that was in San Jose. And it was probably the early 50s, if I remember correctly. There was this man that came to the community. He came from Los Angeles later. We found out that he had organized the CSO chapter in Los Angeles already, and San Jose was his second target. And he came, and actually he approached the parish priest there, a very, very young priest who was very active in the community, you know. And he was asking for names of families that he could probably go talk to. And so Father McDonald gave Fred Ross our name, address and everything, so he came to see us. And we thought that he wanted, because we were, in those days, we were so untrusting of white people, at least, you know, I mean, we were, you know. And we said, well, this guy wants to sell us something, or the first thing that came to your mind, he wants to sell us something, or wants to con us some way, or something, you know. And so we didn't pay much attention to him. And then finally, after about the third try that he wanted to talk to us, we just shined him on, you know. And finally, about the third time, we said, let's talk to him. What he wants, he's very insisting. He wants to talk to us, so let's see what he wants to sell us. That's what we had. And so we let him come in. We talked to him, and he started talking about CSO and all the things that CSO was doing in Los Angeles, and that it was a community organization, and that there was this sleeping giant that you know, talking about the Hispanic people, the Mexican American or whatever. And so we really got interested. I mean, we were waiting for something like that. I guess we were ripe for it, you know, to hear something like that, that we could get organized and bring about change. And so we really got turned on. And from there on, he recruited us to as volunteers to do some. In fact, sometimes we were working, we couldn't wait till the day was over so we could come and just shower and go do whatever, knock door to door and go do whatever has to be done. Talk to people, having house meetings, and we really got involved. And that's where Cesar got his real start, because then later, he became the director of CSO.
But weren't you or Cesar or both of you going to play a trick on him when he arrived?
I'm not part of that little story, so I don't know exactly what happened. I think that Cesar had arranged with some of the other friends to kind of make fun of him or something. But then when they saw the man in action, when he was talking to us, he was so serious about what he was saying that they forgot all about that. It never happened, because he organized them right away, immediately, I guess is what it was. And so it never happened. I wasn't part of the story, but I heard that something had happened, something like that.
Overall, what kind of effect did Fred have on Cesar and on you?
Well, I think really, I really think that Fred Ross was the instrument that got Cesar started, you know. Really, I think it probably would have been for Fred Ross. I could have happened, but I think it would have happened much later. I think Fred was early in his life, he made a tremendous, tremendous impact, and that's where Cesar took off. Also on me, because I later became, I started working union and learned a lot about unionism and so forth. And so we had, I think he was a key to our start, you know, really.
In the early days, how did Cesar make it? I mean, when he first started organizing, did the family help him out?
I think Cesar had, when he was working for CSO, just before he resigned CSO, because you know they didn't want to go into organizing farm workers, and so yeah, these reasons. So he said, "I'm going to resign from CSO and go do it myself." And I think he had a few dollars saved, you know, about $1,000 he had saved while he was working for CSO, and he decided to get started on that, you know, which wasn't much to start a project like that. And
sorry, we have to stop for a moment. I'll re-ask that question. The camera just ran out of film. So did you guys pitch it?
Yeah, we used to.
Rolling.
Camera roll 30, take 3.
But tell me how Cesar, in the early days, he started organizing on his own. How was he able to make it? Did the family help him out?
Yeah, the family helped Cesar at the beginning when he was started organizing. I think he had saved a little money while he was working for CSO. Not much, but a little, so he could... So he could get started. We used to help him with gas money or, you know, whatever, bring him some food sometimes, whatever we could help him with. And not only the family, but other friends, good friends, you know, that Cesar had, that would just send him a 20 here and there, and Fred Ross would send him money, and others. And so, not much, but enough just to keep him going with gas money and rent money and so forth. And it was very, very, very difficult at the beginning, I'm sure, you know. Sometimes he didn't even have enough money to pay his phone bills, and, you know, it weren't big, but just whatever little it was, he didn't have money to pay him. We'd have to help him out and pitch in and so forth.
What about the first office? What was that?
Oh, the first office was at my place, my house. That was the first office. We used my phone for the organizing. That's where he used to get his messages and make calls out of there. In fact, 30 years later, now that phone bill is still in my name. After 30 years, it still comes in Richard Chavez doing business at CFW. So it's, you know, it's been a long time.
Now, what convinced you? Apparently, in about 66, Caesar asked you to join him. What were you doing then, and how was he able to convince you to join him?
I was already helping Caesar a lot part-time. I wasn't full-time, but I was part-time. I was still doing my work. I was doing building. I was doing carpenter work. And one day when he found out that the thing was really going to get into high gear, he felt that the time was right, that he had to make a move. He came and he approached me and said, Richard, he says, just like that, he says, Richard, I want you to hang up your hammer. He said, you know, you're going to have to come and help me. I'm going to need a lot of help, and I need some people that I can depend on and can trust, and you know, and can, you know, I need somebody close to me, and I think he would be a good somebody to come and help me. And I said, well, Caesar, you see, you know, that's a big decision that I have to make. You know, I have to consult with my family because, you know, I do have a wife and kids and so forth. And so I talked to my wife and I talked to my children, even though they were small, and I told them what we were going to go through, you know, because I was working pretty steady. I was making a pretty decent living, you know. They had things that kids wanted to have and so forth. And it's not going to be no more of that. It's going to be very lean from now on. And they all said, it's okay, we understand. So I told them, after I talked to my wife and my family and so forth, they decided that if that's what I wanted to do, that I should do it, you know. And I did want to do that. So I said, okay, Caesar, I'll put my hammer away. Let's see. And then I came and joined him, and I was with him for over 20 years.
What was the first big campaign, the first big effort that you worked on?
Oh, gee. Probably DiGiorgio and the Shandy campaigns. Those were the first ones, just before the big march to Sacramento, that 1966.
Yeah. What stands out in your mind about Shandy and the DiGiorgio campaigns? what do you remember most distinctly, vividly about that?
I guess there were a lot of skeptics that thought that it couldn't be done because it had never been done before. I think that's what comes to mind. And as they started seeing that we were making headway, we were really organizing people. That's what we started to do, you know. And then a lot of those skeptics, some union people and other community leaders, and even some church people started thinking, started to see that we were really, really moving and making headway. So we started getting all kinds of support. It was a lot of fun, let me tell you, because it was the first time, it was something brand new that we were doing, and we had the right to do it. It was within our rights to do it. We were doing it the way it's supposed to be done, and protesting and marching and picketing, and it was very exciting. The early days. And then as quick as we got a victory out of it, we had something in hand that we could show that we had done it, then it really was really the beginning of the whole thing.
Yeah. Now, once there were some successes in Delano in that area, Cesar moved on over to Salinas, and you were left behind to run the hiring hall. What was that, a new challenge, or what was that like for you?
Oh, that was I even like to remember those days. They were very, very awful days for everybody, I guess, especially for me. We had just gotten the contracts in Delano. We had just had the victory in Delano, and there was a lot of, we had to organize ourselves because now we had to start doing administration, and we knew how to go out there and raise all kinds of hell and all that, but administration, well, we didn't have that experience. And we just, at least in my mind, I never thought that I would have to be doing that, to be an administrator and run something entirely different than what I was used to do. And so we had just gotten those contracts in Delano when the Teamster thing broke out in Salinas. The Teamster started moving to the fields out there, and we said, well, we have to move too, because... and then everybody, the whole campaign that we had just won our victories, moved to the Salinas area, and I was left to administer contracts, not having any idea what it was to administer contracts. It was just like very, very hard times. Well, it was just very, very difficult. Inexperienced, we didn't have the experience to do it, and I didn't have the help to begin with. Everybody left.
How did you do it?
Well, they sent me a lot of volunteers came in from Berkeley, and we're trying to do it with volunteers, and we managed to do some of it, but we didn't do it as well as we should have. Later on, we did straighten it out, but at the very beginning, because we had to sign up thousands of people, sign them up in cards and know where they're working, and it was really, really difficult, very difficult times.
Okay, now I'm going to switch around a little bit. Your family, you were real close to Cesar's kids, and Cesar's kids were close to you. How close were you, really?
Cesar and I were very, very close as brothers can get. Other being brothers, we were the best of friends, you know. And our families are also very close. We always live close together. In fact, I tell everybody that Cesar and I were always together through our lives. The only time that we were separated, one from the other, is when he had to go to the service for about 2.5 years. He went into the Navy. That's the only time, actually, that we were separated. Because we grew up together, and it's strange because even we hung out together as teenagers. You don't see that too often, two brothers hanging around. You know, everybody, two brothers, he has his friends, and the other brother has their own friends. And Cesar, we had common friends, but we were part of it, and we were all together. And then after we got married, we were living right next to each other. And so we went up north to work in the lumber mills, and we were together. And then we came back and started organizing. We were together, you know, through all the organizing. So we spend our lives together, lifetime together.
Okay. Now, of all the major strikes, the major campaigns, which one was the toughest? Which one stands out in your mind as being probably the toughest of all the campaigns?
Well, there's been a lot of hard ones, but the ones that I was directly involved with was when we were organizing White River Farms. That was very hard. And also when when they were doing Jamara, in that time I was in the boycott, doing boycott work in Detroit. I wasn't here for that, but that's when the killings happened, and you know, that's when they killed Juan de la Cruz and Naji Daifala, and it was very, 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 very hard. I wasn't here for that. But so there were many, many difficult campaigns, but the ones that I remember are those in White River Farms was very difficult, and Chamara. It's a very hard campaign.
When Nafti and Juan were killed, what was the reaction? What was Caesar's reaction to
it? Like I say, I wasn't here, but what I could hear from the reports we used to get from the newsletters, or you know, the reports they used to give us, he knew that we were in a very difficult times. That times were going to be very difficult from there on, because the opposition was fighting very hard, and they would go to any length to discourage us from keep organizing, even as far as killing people and so forth. So we just had to make a decision: do we quit now, or do we continue? We continue because that's what the people wanted. So it's very hard decisions to make.
There were threats on Cesar's life. How did he react, and how did you react to
it? Many. There were many threats, many times. Well, he said that he used to say all the time that when threats came to his attention, that he had to continue doing what he's doing. He wasn't going to let some threat stop him from what he had to do, you know. And so we just took precautions. We put more security on him and so forth, which he didn't like. He never did like his security. At one point, we had to, the FBI called, said that there was a very, very serious threat that he would advise us to take off and hide someplace for a while. And we took off. I was part of the security. And so we took off, and we're on the road for over a month. We just moved from place to place to place to place until things cooled down a little. But that was a very serious one, so it's difficult.
Now, you left the Union in 1984. What was there a reason there? Was it time for you to move on, or what did you feel when you left? Do you want to get back to your work, your family?
Mm-hmm. My work, yeah.
I want to get that. Basically, what I want to get to is left. I want to get back.